They say, the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:09 Wednesday, May 4th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And it must be Derby week, guys, because I checked Twitter and my feed is nothing but photos and videos of horses getting bathed.
It is Derby week, but where's the nice weather, guys? It's freezing again here. We just left Keeneland where it's freezing. Now it's freezing and cold here in New Jersey. So let's hope. I believe the weather forecast for Saturday is very good. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, and with Derby and Oaks weekend coming up, that really should be the focus of everything and not the fact that the Mets and the Yankees are in first place and that the Rangers lost in triple overtime last night. We won't talk about other sports. It's only going to be horse-centric.
Don't remind.
Thanks for not trashing my Red Sox, who are battling that with Baltimore for last place in the AL East.
Thanks for reminding me of that game last night that aged me about 10 years in one night.
That's what I'm here for.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Miss you already, Keeneland. Keeneland is the home of the world's yearling sale. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September yearling sale, which begins Monday, September 12th. Learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. So it is Derby week. Bill and I broke down the Derby pretty extensively the other day in our Better Things episode. If you haven't watched it, I suggest you go check it out. So we'll start with John today because we haven't heard his thoughts yet. John, what are your thoughts? Who are you scared of? Who are you trying to beat? Did the draw affect anything? What do you think?
Well, first and foremost, Joe, I gotta compliment you guys on the Better Things show because I actually had some notes written down. I watched your podcast and actually rewrote some of my notes based on your insight and Bill's excellent insight as well about the history of the Derby. So I just wanted to add just an overarching comment before I get into the picks. I thought there was some interesting takeaways. Number one is, you know, there's 20 horses in the race, but the sires of the horses, you know, there's the son of Uncle Mo, Empire Maker, Tappet, Giant's Causeway, Pioneer the Nile, Quality Road, kind of the usual suspects. But what I was surprised this year is listen to these up-and-coming stallions that have representation in the Derby. Hit it a bomb, Upstart, and then not one but two entries for Not This Time, Gun Runner, and Race Day. So to me, you know, there's going to be a lot of money that's going to change hands on the stallion front based on how these horses run the Derby. But I was really excited that there are just as many horses in the race that are by young up-and-coming sires as there are by the old guard. That made me feel very good just as an industry that the wealth is kind of getting, you know, diversified amongst some of these new shooters. Also, talking about old guys, new guys, how about Brereton Jones, who's been in the business forever? He's bred not one but two entries in this year's Derby, Zandon and Summer's Tomorrow. So, again, kudos to the old guard for breeding some horses with Airdrie Studs, you know, that he's involved with and has not one but two horses in this race. That being said, you know, there's no overwhelming favorite in this race. I can't remember in recent history when we've had such a lukewarm opening line, morning line favorite like we do right now. And I think that says not only about how many horses can do well in this race, but also that there's no standout. There's no horse coming into this race that's going to be 6-5 or 9-5. And I don't know if it's the effect of the fact that we've had so many preps that have been won by different horses, if it's the fact that the public's not, you know, rallying behind a Baffert horse that usually they like to do. I'm sure there's a lot of different reasons, but I was surprised that there's no real favorite, and I couldn't make a favorite. If you said to me, John, who's going to be 2-1 in this race, I don't think I could tell you right now. That being said, there's 8 horses in this race that I think I would throw out that I wouldn't go through, you know, and put in a bet. So that being said, you know, you guys should all run to the windows and bet that trifecta box with those 8 horses. But as far as horses that I like, and you guys mentioned it a couple times on Better Things, you know, obviously Zandon is a horse that I really, really like and a horse that I think is rounding into shape, you know, coming into the Derby. Messier, again, no brainer, not going out on a limb very much. A horse that I think, you know, coming off a layoff, ran a pretty good Santa Anita Derby and is just bred to go long. And I don't think there's going to be a big change between Baffert and Yak Team because, quite frankly, I think Baffert's been training the horse all the way through. And now he's just kind of handing it off, you know, in name only. But there were a couple of what I would call kind of medium long shots that I liked. And Mo Donegal's a horse, and I know we spoke to Mike Rapoli later on about Mo Donegal and his association with the horse and the fact that the horse is sired by his horse, Uncle Mo. I just feel like that Mo Donegal, even though he's in the one hole, he's going to relish the distance. He's going to love going the extra furlong or two that what he's been used to running. And I think he's really rounding in the form. It doesn't scare me this year that he's in the one hole for two reasons. Not only because they changed the starting gate, which you guys have talked about before. So now it's all one gate as opposed to, the auxiliary gate and having the one path actually on the inside of the rail, where a horse had to make a right turn to get onto the main part of the track. And also Mo Donegal has run in the one or two hole in all but one of his races. Every single race but one, he's been in the one and two. So he's not a rush to the front kind of horse. It almost doesn't matter. So the fact that he's on the rail and going to be able to save ground, I think is going to help him. Now he's going to have to navigate, through traffic like we do, on Fridays in the summertime, here in the Parkway. But I think that IRAD is going to be very confident on him. And if he can get some space, he's a horse that's going to be coming on at the end. And then I have two other horses that I wanted to talk about with you guys and get your opinions on. Charge It is a horse that obviously I picked in the contest, and I think is rounding into form. He's a Tappet and out of an Indian Charlie mare, and I think he's going to, again, also relish the extra distance. He's got tactical speed, so I think that's going to help him a lot when he breaks. He doesn't have to be in front, but he would like to be close to the front. And Bill, you gave an excellent statistic on the other show about horses that have to be, within what, the first three at the first call? Mm-hmm. What was the stat?
It was every Derby since 2014. No winner has ever been further back than third at any call in the race.
Yeah. So I really feel like that horses with tactical speed. And guys, we talked about it all throughout the preps where we kept saying, oh, there's so much speed. Oh, what's going to happen when this horse comes up? And it really hasn't played out that way where there's, just a ton of speed out there. So I think a horse like Charge It, albeit he's only run three times, he's lightly raced and not seasoned. I think he's going to have a really good chance. And then you guys didn't, I don't think you mentioned Cyberknife, who's a horse that didn't get a great post, a Brad Cox horse, where really, if you cross out his LeCompte race, where he really didn't run at all, he's run five times and won three of them. And I know the Arkansas Derby was a very, very watered down Arkansas Derby and a very watered down grade one compared to a lot of these other races. But he still ran a good number and he ran a good number on the sheets and he ran a good number on the buyers. Was it a action packed, deep field? No, it wasn't. But he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He won it easily. And I think that he's kind of a sneaky horse to pick, from coming in from the 16 hole. So those are the five: Messier, Mo Donegal, Zandon, Cyberknife, and Charge It, in no particular order. Those would be the ones that I really like. And I didn't mention Taba, and I just don't know how to read him. And I wanted your guys' opinion on him. He's a $1.7 million two-year-old. He's bred up the wazoo. He's done nothing wrong. He won his first race, in a hand ride by seven. And then they jumped him up from six furlongs to nine furlongs the next race, which really isn't easy. And he won that race kind of easily as well without Lasix. And Mike Smith, is Money Mike. I mean, he's a guy that you have to respect. So I just don't know how to read that horse. Is he ready for a bounce? Because they've asked him to do so much, go six furlongs to nine furlongs and from a maiden race to a grade one. And now across the country to the Derby with a different trainer. That might be too much for a horse that's only run twice. But I think talent wise, he's got as much talent as anybody in this race.
Yeah, I mean, that was the horse that I think I talked the most about on Better Things was Taba, because he is such a wild card, and he's going to be one of those horses, I think, that's going to make 8 or 9 or 10 to 1 look like the biggest overlay of the century, or he's going to be a horse that flames out and then we don't see him for another 6 months. And I think that there's very little in between with him. He's either Justify or he's a horse that's too under-seasoned to be running in the Kentucky Derby. But I said on the show that I thought the draw helped him a lot. I think for a horse as inexperienced as him, the further he drew outside, the better. I don't think you want to be inside with a horse like that, especially inside of the other speed. And he was able to draw outside of most of the other speed. And like you said, Mike Smith, there are a handful of jockeys that I trust no matter what in big, big races. It's him, Joel Rosario, the Ortiz brothers, Johnny Velasquez, Luis Saez, I would say, like a half dozen jockeys that I trust to do the right thing in these races and not get the horse beat. Just that's the main thing. If the horse is good enough or the horse isn't good enough, the jockey doesn't get the horse beat, and Mike Smith is one of those guys who you will hardly ever see get the horse beat. And I think that the post aided his quest in there. And, you know, like you said, with Cyberknife, I wouldn't throw him out. Do I particularly like him? No, but I wouldn't throw him out. The thing about this Derby that makes it so hard is, John, you said you had 8 horses that you tossed. I only had 6 that I tossed. Ideally, if you're going to bet the race, you kind of want to be able to throw out at least half the field, because then otherwise it gets too prohibitively expensive to bet these tries and supers. So if you have an idea on a price in the on the Derby, this is the year to go for it. I think that there are a handful of horses that are, you know, slightly a cut above the rest of the field, but it's not a huge gap. It's not one of those Derbies where you feel comfortable doing like a 4 or 5 horse box, and then you just move on and use those horses. If you got a price idea, if anybody out there has a price idea, do not let us talk you off of that horse, because this is a Derby where I think you're gonna get paid, because like John says, there is no clear favorite, and the favorite's gonna be 7-2 or 4-1. So even if you get 2 of the short prices in the try, you get another long shot, you get a long shot in there, you can really get paid pretty nicely. So you only have to be a little right, I think, in this year's Derby. You don't have to be all the way right, and that's the way I like it. If I can be a little right and make some money, that's the way to go. Bill, any other thoughts on what?
Yeah, I just want to, on that same theme, and John said, you tossed 8 horses, I think Joe said 6. You know, we have between now and Saturday to make that list bigger, but, you know, no knock on what you guys think, because I agree with you, but John, you threw out 6 horses. You can't have a 14 horse trifecta box that costs more money than even Jim McInvale is willing to bet on the Derby. So, you know, the key is I think you know, if you're playing this race, and we all agree it's very competitive, really wide open, but you're just going to have to bite the bullet and find 5 or 6 more horses to add to that list. That's why in the Better Things podcast, I said I'm going to throw out all the Florida Derby horses. Now, I love Charge Its Race, but you got to throw out somebody. You can't throw, if you're going to play the race, you can't, again, box 12 horses. So if Charge It wins, I'm not the least bit surprised. But, you know, I said, all right, well, wait a minute here. I think the Florida Derby and the Arkansas Derby of the major or the 100-point prep, or Jeff Ruby Stakes too, I don't really count that, but of the 100-point prep races were the 2 weakest. So therefore, I'll throw out all the Arkansas Derby horses and I'll throw out all the Florida Derby horses. Now, again, that's not throwing out anybody's necessarily going to be 4-1 in the race, but you know, add on to that list. Then, Joe, another way to play the race, like you said, you know, you're looking at tries and everything, but if you have that 20-1 shot that you really think is live, put a win bet on them. Just, you know, go old school, 20 to win on, you know, whoever that horse may be. And, you know, if it's going to pay $42, you got $420 there. So, you know, maybe that's the right strategy.
Yeah, I think honestly, this is a win place race. And also if you have one horse that you want to key with a bunch of other horses, because if you're like me and you don't have, you know, a dozen horses that you're willing to throw out entirely, find one horse you like, key them with 10, 11 other horses, you know, that you could spend $100 and be covered if the horse runs in the try and the try isn't filled with horses that you've otherwise tossed. I think that's the way to go, like Bill is saying, a win bet, or find a horse you like at a good price that you're confident will at least hit the board, and then you can wheel in the other slots and then hope to get lucky. Because this is like the Derby, I think, is the closest to like a slot machine to any other race in America. Like, A lot of other times, you have to have this strong opinion and really punch it, especially with so many 6 and 7 horse fields in American racing. But in the Derby, that's one of the races where you can find one thing you like and then just spin the wheel in the other slots and then, you know, hope to get rewarded.
Yep. Joe, let me just add one more thing just with regard to our contest, because we actually have representation in 11 out of the 20 starters.
That's pretty good.
Which is really, really good. So, if we want to throw up the standings right now, but basically for those of you who are rooting at home, if you're rooting for any of our groups, I have Modonical and Charge It. Bill has Epicenter, Messier, who I think is a very strong combination there. Joe, you have Smile Happy and Classic Causeway and White Abaria. You got 3 in there, and Al, who doesn't have a mouthpiece here in our show right now, is speaking loudly. He's got Zandon, Simplification and Zozos. So he's got the two Z's come running and Simplification. So he's got a really good opportunity to win this contest as well. But
don't forget Sue.
And Sue got Pioneer of Medina. I forgot he got Pioneer of Medina snuck in. And you know, Pioneer of Medina is an interesting horse because Pletcher is taking the blinkers off, and this horse has run, this will be his seventh race with seven different jockeys.
Wow.
Joe Bravo, Jersey Joe riding Pioneer of Medina. So, you know, we got to give props to the Jersey guy. But, you know, 11 out of 20 is a pretty good, you know, catch for, you know, for us to have done.
John, I just want to bring up another point. I realized we're about 20 minutes into the podcast. And when you talked about Epicenter in the contest, the first mention we made. And, yeah. You know, here's a horse that he wasn't the morning line favorite, but we thought he was going to be the morning line favorite a week ago. And again, this is kind of horse, and I don't know why it is. I can't put my finger on it, but it's just, it seems like nobody's on his bandwagon. So what's your take on him? And, you know, obviously this is not a horse I would throw out, but, you know, it just seems to be that, like, you know, he's coming into this race with very kind of lukewarm feelings surrounding him.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, you mentioned before I had eight horses that I definitely had weren't good, that I didn't think were going to be, you know, worthy of betting on. And it, just for cost purposes, you have to, you know, narrow your field down to five or six horses in a trifecta if it's going to be cost effective. And I always look, and maybe this isn't the right way to do it, but when I look at a race, I always look at the favorite first and look for reasons on how to beat the favorite. And I know that's not necessarily a conventional good thing to do because favorites win a third of the races. But just from a handicapping standpoint and from a value standpoint, I usually look at it that way. And I can make a case for Epicenter to win, certainly. That's easy. But I can also make a case for Epicenter to bounce. And you know, he ran such a huge race in the Risen Star, breaking the track record, and then came back and ran and won really impressively in the Louisiana Derby again, breaking that track record. And I just feel like that with these young horses, when they put in those kind of performances, they have a tendency to bounce because it's just so hard to do it. Now, is that the right way to look at it? Probably not. I mean, Epicenter is definitely a horse, a contender, and one that, you know, if I was smart, I would keep in a box, trifecta or an exacta box. But in this day and age of having like 20 horses and you have to throw out, you know, at least 14 of them, he was the one that I cut because I just said, I think he's heading for a bounce. I would not be surprised if he's standing, you know, if Steve Asmussen standing in the winner's circle, you know, with the Winchell group holding the trophy with that horse. But I had to throw him out. And the same thing with Taba. I am so impressed with that horse's, you know, just sheer athleticism and talent. But he's only run twice. And again, you have to throw out a couple of horses that you think are really going to win. And you guys, you know, you guys talked about that in the Better Things show as well. Sometimes you have to throw some horses out, not because you don't think they're going to win, but because it's just going to be a little harder for them to win. And because they're favorites, you need value somewhere else.
Yeah. And Epicenter, I agree with Bill that he hasn't been talked about that much this week. I still stand by his Louisiana Derby to me was the most impressive prep that anybody ran all season. To me, it's that and Messier and the Bob Lewis 1-2 either way. So I'm definitely using him. And it's, you know, it's such a big storyline. Steve Asmussen still trying to go for his first Derby. This is his best chance, I think. I can't think of a horse that he brought to the Derby that had a better chance. Maybe Curlin. You know, maybe perhaps Curlin. But that, other than that, it's hard to remember a horse who had better credentials than Epicenter going into the Derby. I did say on Better Things that I think he was hampered by the post a little bit. I think drawing inside of the other's speed, he's going to have to, it's going to be a little bit tricky going into the first turn for Joel Rosario. But, you know, again, he's, like I said, he's one of those riders that I trust to do the right thing. It's just a matter of circumstance, whether or not he's going to be able to get the kind of trip that he wants to get. But, you know, he's definitely a key horse on my tickets. But, you know, it's gonna be a terrific weekend of racing. We're gonna talk about the Oaks and the rest of the races at Churchill a little bit. As always, the weather is going to be a story, especially on Friday. I'm looking at the weather forecast right now. We have a 90% chance of thunderstorms on Friday, so that can definitely throw a monkey wrench into things for the Oaks and the undercard races. And it looks like 30% chance on Saturday, so it looks like Saturday probably gonna be mostly dry. So at least for the Derby. You know, it might be a drying out track, which I think adds another variable to the handicapping, because those tracks can play a lot different than either a sloppy track or a fast track. If you have those tracks that are, you know, they're constantly losing moisture throughout the day. So that's something to keep an eye on. But yeah, it's been a long road, and we're happy that we have so much representation in the contest. So there'll be a lot of bragging rights on the line. So looking forward to it, looking forward to talking about it with you guys. And then after this break, we're going to talk about the Oaks and the rest of the weekend at Churchill. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland concluded its spring race meet last Friday with All Sources handle topping $219 million to establish an all-time wagering record for the track. And I don't know if you've heard, but Keeneland's been around for a little bit, so that's an impressive number. The meet concluded with average daily purses over $1.1 million and an average field size of 9.1 starters per race, which is unheard of today in American racing. And I think that was the real takeaway for me, and what a great meet it was. Just big field after big field after big field. And it just, you know, adding that to the quality of horses that are running, it just makes it impossible not to want to bet that product. So shout out to Keeneland, shout out to everybody at the racing office who put on such a great product all meet. And obviously we had a lot of fun being there as well. This weekend, Zandon and Nest, both Keeneland September yearling sales grads, and the winners of the Grade 1 Toyota Bluegrass and Grade 1 Central Bank Ashland Stakes are the respective morning line favorites in the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks. Keeneland sales graduates have produced 23 Derby winners, including 4 of the last 6 and the past 5 winners of the Kentucky Oaks. So as I said in the open, that Keeneland September yearling sale coming in starting September 12th, and you can almost always find a big Derby or Oaks contender there. So definitely go check that out at theworldsyearlingsale.com. The catalog will be out soon. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
This gleaming chestnut wins by 6 on debut with the promise of bigger things to come. Justify, he's on a dizzying ascent to greatness.
What do you do when the experts compare you to legends?
Justify has won the Kentucky Derby! He's unstoppable! He won the Preakness! Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner!
You justify it.
The TDN Riders Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Follow the Coolmore Sires this weekend in the Derby and Oaks. And the Oaks, my son, Cupid, will be represented by Desert Dawn, who I like a little bit in that race. We're going to talk about it in a few. Cocktail Moments is the daughter of Uncle Mo, and Shahama is by Munnings. And the Derby, obviously the big dog, Uncle Mo, will be represented by Mo Donegal. Zozos is the son of Munnings, and Classic Causeway will be the last Kentucky Derby starter for the late, great Giants Causeway. All right, so we had a lot of fun talking about the Derby, but this year I think equal billing on the marquee is the Kentucky Oaks, because we have 4 really, really nice fillies, I think all who have legitimate shots to win champion filly this year, 3-year-old filly this year. Bill and I talked a little bit about it on Better Things, but also, you know, just like the Derby, I want to hear what John says first.
And it's the opposite story as the Derby. The Derby, it was like there's a lukewarm favorite and maybe there's half a dozen horses that you could make a case for to be the favorite. Here, it's the top 4 fillies and everybody else. And that's not to say that everyone else are afterthoughts. I mean, they're really good horses in here. And I think we talked over the past couple of weeks about how there were, you know, 5, 6, 7 fillies that were going to be, you know, going into the Oaks that in any other year would have been, you know, 5-1 or better as far as towards favoritism. You have to start with Secret Oath in the 1 hole. It's a great story. Arrogate, you know, the late great Arrogate, you know, a daughter of Arrogate in here. And with the general, you know, Dwayne Lucas in charge of getting this filly, you know, ready for the Oaks. She ran in the Arkansas Derby and put in a pretty good race against the boys. And now they're running her against the girls. And she got the 1 hole with Luis Saez. So, you know, the connections are right. The breeding is right. The distance is right. I'm not happy about the post, but, you know, that's okay because she's, you know, just such a solid filly. In the past, I've talked about Hidden Connection and how I thought that she was a sneaky horse, and she ran a very good second to Echo Zulu last time. I think she's out of her depths right now. I think this is going to be too far for her, so I'm not including her. Nest, I mean, what else is there to say about Nest except that, in my humble opinion, I think she ran the best prep race for the boys or the girls, for that matter, during this entire season when she won the Ashland. I mean, that was just a wow, inspiring kind of race. Does she bounce? I don't know. It looked like she won that so easily that maybe she still had a lot in the tank. Also, the fact that it's probably going to rain on Friday, you have to look at some of these horses and how they've produced on off racetracks. And that Ashland Stake was a wet, fast track, and she won it very, very convincingly and has a huge wet number. Goddess of Fire, I think, is a sneaky long shot who's I think being overlooked at 15-1. Todd Fletcher horse. You know, all she's done is finish second to some of these great, great horses with, you know, like Kathleen O and Turner Loose and Hidden Connection. I think she's a horse that actually, if the race falls apart, she could pick up the pieces and be a sneaky long shot to complete like a trifecta box. And then, you know, on Better Things, you guys talked about the top four and you know, including Kathleen O and Echo Zulu. And I'm going to go to Echo Zulu last because I have a different take on this than I think you guys do. Yes, she won the Fairground Oaks by a nose and didn't look great in that race. But she accomplished two things. Number one is she won, okay? And she dug down deep and made sure that she got her nose in front. And number two, she was coming off like a five-month layoff. And sometimes these young horses need to have rust knocked off and kind of get their sea legs back. And I think that's exactly what happened with her. And since then, she's been, if you look at her, all of her workouts, and you can see that on XBTV, that, you know, she is just a bullet after a bullet after a bullet and looks really easy doing it. And I really think that if Echo Zulu is sitting there at 4-1 or 5-1, that's the filly that I'm going to pound on as far as betting, because she's, you know, undefeated, you know, 2-year-old champion, a gun runner, you know, with a really good female pedigree that looks like they can run all day. And I think, you know, just like Epicenter in the Derby, I think Echo Zulu's kind of being overlooked right now because she didn't win that last race so impressively. I think she did exactly what she needed to do, and that Steve Asmussen has her, you know, poised for the exact, you know, race that she's going to run in the Oaks. Two more horses, and then I'll let you guys get to it. Kathleen O obviously ran a huge race in the Gulfstream Park Oaks. And, you know, Shug McGahey horse, you always figure is going to be a little bit better each time. I actually think that she might bounce because she improved so much. She improved so much from the Devona Dale to the Oaks that I think that maybe she's going to come back to earth a little bit. And then, guys, there's one more horse that I really want your opinions on, and that's Shahama, who's coming in from overseas. I saw her, and Joe, I think you were there with me when we watched at the OBS April sale last year when she sold for $425,000. Her Breeze Under Tack Show was unbelievable. She's beautiful. And now the $425,000 price tag is looking like it's inexpensive because she's undefeated. And I really feel like she's a sneaky long shot because she's one of the few horses that's actually cutting back in distance. She's run this far before, and now she's coming back. Now, she's undefeated overseas. Who did she run against? You know, that's always questionable, but she did everything she needed to do. Her time form ratings are very solid, and she's also won impressively in the mud. So if it's an off track, she might be the kind of filly where, you know, she's sitting there 15-20-1 being trained by Todd Fletcher and ridden by Flavian Pratt, who, you know, last I checked is a pretty good rider. I think that's a horse that's worth throwing into the trifecta box as well, and maybe a sneaky long shot, because if she comes in and runs her number, she's going to be very tough to beat also.
John, let me comment just on some of your comments. First of all, I'm totally the opposite direction of Echo Zulu. You and you know, look, I'm not saying your scenario isn't possible, but here's my scenario. We know that, you know, at least 75% of the good two-year-olds don't take that next step, and they don't get any better. They're the same horse at two as they are at three, and they don't make that forward move. I believe that may be the case with Echo Zulu. And having said that, even if your scenario is right, she still might not be good enough. That's how strong this field is. So, you know, I'm again, like you have to take a stand. There's no point boxing these four horses. You're not going to find any value there. That'll be my stand on her. And the other one, I definitely disagree with you. I don't know if I mentioned on the Better Things that the clockers are down on Kathleen O. They didn't like her workout, but I would never think that a Shug McGahey trained horse is going to bounce in the race that they've been pointing to from day one. You know, maybe somewhere down the line, but there is no trainer in the sport better at bringing his horses up step by step by step into the big race. And look at this horse's form. I mean, it's so prototypical McGahey. She's won every time, but from the number standpoint, she has gotten better. Not, you know, it's not like she's gone from a 60 buyer to a 90. It's that gradual progression every single time out. And on Gulfstream Park Oaks Day, Shug McGahey was not thinking about winning the Gulfstream Park Oaks. He was thinking about, what am I going to do today with this horse to get her to peak in the Kentucky Oaks? Then you bring up an interesting point about the Pletcher horse, Shahama. You had some good insights on that. That's just a complete mystery to me. I don't know what to do. Sure, you know, if you want to throw the horse in. The other thing, I kind of wish that she had a race here. I realize, you know, pretty soon we'll be talking about horses coming into the Kentucky Derby as maidens, you know, or as first time starters. Why not? You know, I mean, but, you know, she hasn't run since February 18th. So we just don't, you know, and that's twofold. It means she's still a mystery horse because she's never run in the U.S. and we haven't seen her against top flight competition. And, you know, that is, she's coming into the Kentucky Oaks off a layoff of, what, 2.5 months. Even in this day and age, that seems like a lot.
What's interesting about this race, honestly, and, you know, the wet track might throw another variable at it, but, you know, I don't see a ton of speed. And I was going into this race ready to bet against Echo Zulu because, you know, like you guys say, and like I've said on the show before, she's a champion. She might be the fourth best filly in this race. Like, that's how good of a field it is. And I just thought, you know, she got in these races last year where she was loose on the lead, not too much behind her. And, you know, she was impressive, but it wasn't one of those horses that blew me away in terms of champions. But who's going to go with her in here? Now, the horse to her inside, Ugiri, has speed. But other than that, I'm looking through the race, and I don't know who is going to be fast enough to keep up with those two early. Maybe Hidden Connection shows
maybe a Hidden Connection speed on the rail. Yeah,
maybe. But, like, you know, beyond those horses, like, it just seems like the kind of race. And what's interesting, too, is there are a lot of horses who make middle moves, like Kathleen O and Nest. They made middle moves in those races, their last races, and blew that race apart. So I think it's going to be one of those races where, you know, the first quarter and half are probably going to be pretty slow. And then the third, you might get that 23, 22, and 4 third quarter. And then the race is really on after that. And I think that it's going to be a very interesting last three and a half furlongs, because I do think that it's going to be a pretty slow pace, but I think there are going to be a lot of jockeys on that far turn who are going to make that early move and try to get the jump, because, you know, there are so many horses with big late kicks in this race. You know, Secret Oath has one. Obviously, Kathleen O has a huge late kick. And Nest, you know, she's probably going to be a little bit closer than those two, but she's got a big late kick as well. And it's just what a fascinating field, because just look at all the wind machines in this race. I mean, Nest is 4 for 5 with a third. Echo Zulu is 5 for 5. Even a horse like a long shot that I like, Venti Valentine,
yeah.
5 starts, 3 wins, 2 seconds. Kathleen O is 4 for 4. Shahama, like John mentioned, is 4 for 4. I think she's probably a little bit slow, but, you know, she beat the boys 3 times in the UAE before winning the UAE Oaks. You know, Secret Oath is 4 for 7. Nostalgic's 3 for 5. It's a race where you got a lot of very winning-type fillies, and that makes it even harder. And I agree with you guys that, you know, there's no point in boxing the four favorites. I think there are a couple horses that maybe you could sneak into the try, perhaps the Exacta if things are a little bit funny. Goddess of Fire is one of those horses. Venti Valentine, as I said. Desert Dawn, I think, ran sneaky well in the Santa Anita Oaks. Like, I know she was 14-1, but she and Adair Manor were 7.5 lengths clear of the rest of the field that day. So I think she's got a little bit of talent. I would love to throw Cocktail Moments in there because I was just so impressed by her debut race. Go back and watch her debut. It was absolutely incredible. She just has not run that race since, and she was no match for Nest in the Ashland. But, you know, just looking through the field, it's hard. It's hard to find someone that you believe can beat at least 2 out of 4 of those top fillies because they're just so good. And I said it on Better Things, and I've said it earlier on this show, that I just can't get past Nest in the Ashland. I thought her race was the best race I've seen. And even in the Suncoast, like, I know that, or whatever that race is called, the Florida Oaks, or what's that race called?
I think you got it right, the Suncoast.
So, I mean, she looked great in that race. Like, I know the figure wasn't that big for that race, but visually I thought she looked crazy impressive that day. Yeah, so to me, it's you know, hammer a nest in the top spot. You know, you want to use the other three fillies underneath. We can make some okay money there. And then if you want to throw in a couple other long shots underneath. But I think, you know, like the Derby in a different way, I think this is a race to find one horse, this time probably a short price, that you can really, you know, key on, and then, you know, in exactas and maybe a little bit of tries.
Do you guys have any opinions on, I mean, we didn't even talk about Nostalgic, but if you look at her resume and you say it's a Godolphin bred, Bill Mott trained medallia out of a Tappet mare, and if you throw out the turf race, all she did was win three races out of four very impressively. I know her speed figures are improving, but they're not quite at that top level. But, you know, if she takes another step forward, she could be, you know, in the talking to as well at 15-1. But Bill, to your point, like, even if she runs a career best and improves to like a 94 buyer, she might be third in this race.
Yeah, exactly, John. I mean, that's the point. In a normal Kentucky Oaks, we might be saying, here's a very live horse. But, you know, look, maybe she can win. This is not a horse I would throw out, but it's just not this year. That's what it all is. Just Joe keeps saying, not this year. Four just superstar horses. I mean, you take Secret Oath at 6-1 in the morning line. I think it's way too high, by the way. But in at 6-1 in the morning line, we've seen plenty of Kentucky Oaks where she would be the 8-5 favorite.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here.
And, you know, just to circle back to what John was saying about Kathleen, you know, she has come a long way in a short amount of time. If you look at her four figures, she's run four times, 67, 78, 85, 98. You know, like you said, like Bill said, Chug McGahee is the guy. He's the guy if you want to find a horse that can keep moving forward. But that's a lot of development in a short amount of time. And I just think she maybe is topped out for this race. I think of the four short prices, I'm mostly against her and Echo Zulu. You know, I Nest and Secret Oath, I think, are the two most interesting horses of the shorter prices. That's where I land. You know, elsewhere, we got a lot of action on the undercards. It's always one of the best weekends in racing, the Kentucky Oaks and the Kentucky Derby Day undercards. There are a lot of interesting horses running and a lot of grade one races. But I'm going to toss it to Bill and John, and if you guys are ready, give me one or two horses that you're most looking forward to other than the big races.
Well, I'll take the obvious one here, which is Jack Christopher in the Pat DeMau. Is it possible the best three-year-old on the card is not in the Kentucky Derby? That's I'm not going to take that leap, not yet. But I loved this horse last year as a two-year-old. I mean, I thought he was just the one of the most impressive two-year-olds I've seen in a long time, which is tremendous upside. I don't believe the connections have really ever said too much about, you know, what has happened, why he's making his first start as a three-year-old on the first Saturday of May and not in the Kentucky Derby. But, you know, if he runs back to his form from last year, you know, he goes off at 2-5 and wins this race, no problem. The interesting thing about that is, what do they do then? There's no way Chad Brown's going to reel his horse back in the Preakness 2 weeks later. And I can't see them running in the Belmont because they're not going to go from a mile to a mile and a half. So I don't know what their ultimate goal is. You know, do you just pencil the Travers in as your next big race with a prep and something like the Peter Pan or the Dwyer or something between now and then? But I mean, he is phenomenal. I can't wait to see what he does, and I'm expecting big things.
And there's a couple of horses that I'm really looking forward to making a bet on, or at least watching. She Dares the Devil, running in the La Trienne, the grade one La Trienne. She's 6-5 in the race. I know she came, out of her Breeders' Cup Distaff loss and ran kind of a just okay race in the Azari. But I'm looking forward to the rust being knocked off her and she improving and doing well. It's a filly who's won half of her starts and made, you know, $2.3 million in earnings. So I'm excited that she's going to be running there. We talk about Olympiad a lot on the show, and he's the favorite in the Ali Sheba against some good, solid older horses like Weyburn and Max Player and Folsom. I think that's a really good race also and a horse to watch. But, you know, we're running in the Grade 2 American Turf for three-year-olds on Derby Day. And first I was like, oh, okay, good. This is be a nice, solid race. And you know, the Grade 2s over the past have been a little weak. Not so much with this race. This is a really salty race. You have Red Run in there, who's a homebred of the Winchells, a gun runner of a Tappet mare. And Bill, you'll appreciate this. For whatever reason, whenever I say his name, I always think of Red Rain, the song, Peter Gabriel song. You know, so I was like, Red Run is winning now.
John, we don't need you singing. Come on.
Yes.
Come on
now. But he's Red Run is running against Portfolio Company, who's a really solid Kitten's Joy of with Chad Brown's barn. And Joe's favorite side dog, who won the Transylvania last time out, is also running in the race, as well as our horse Coinage. So I think this race is also a good betting race. I think there's a lot of good horses in the race. And really, there's five or six that you can make a case for. So I'm excited about that race as a whole. But there's some superstars that are making, you know, that are going to be running this weekend also at Churchill that I'm really excited to watch those specific horses.
Yep. And just to run down a couple of horses I'm looking at, in addition to the guys and fillies that the boys and fillies that you talked about, you know, Olympiad is my guy. I'm going to watch him in the Ali Sheba. There's a horse I like in the Eight Bells, Matarea, who is a good Alfin homebred. She looked so good winning the Beaumont recently at Keeneland. She just completely blew those fillies away. So I think that she's kind of on an upward trajectory where she can make some noise in the second half of the year against these real top class, top flight 3-year old fillies that we have this year. She's still going 7 furlongs. She has to stretch out beyond that eventually. But she's a horse I'm definitely looking forward to seeing in the Eight Bells on the Oaks undercard. You know, the Derby undercard, I echo what you guys said about Jack Christopher. You know, obviously Chad Brown's trying to ease him back now. And I don't know that he's necessarily going to have a date with one of the Triple Crown races, but I think if he wins this race and then improves and stays together, I think he could have a huge summer and be one of those horses who really comes on in the second half of the year and challenges for a championship, for an Eclipse Award and a place on that podium. In the Philly race, the Derby City Distaff, very nice betting race. There's 8-horse field. On the morning line, 6 of the 8 horses are between 3-1 and 5-1. So that tells you what kind of betting race it's going to be. You got Lady Rocket, just one time, who just won the Madison at Keeneland. Kamari, Obligatory, who won the 8 Bells at Churchill last year on Derby weekend, as well as Bells the One and Edgeway, who are very nice fillies. As John was saying, we got the big rematch between Side Dog and Coinage, so we're looking forward to that, and the American Turf. And then a race that you guys didn't mention that I think looks pretty interesting is the Churchill Downs Stakes, grade one for 7 furlongs for older boys, 3 and up. Aloha West, Aloha West, who won the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Jackie's Warrior, who came back a winner recently at Oakland, obviously the champion sprinter last year. Reinvestment Risk, who I thought, you know, he was overshadowed completely by Speaker's Corner with good reason in the Carter, but I think he's a pretty nice horse. He was second in there. I think he could have a pretty good year. Prevalence, who I thought looked good in the Commonwealth. We didn't talk about him when he won at Keeneland, but he's a horse that showed a lot of promise as a 3-year-old, then kind of fell off and got hurt. Come back as a 4-year-old. He's run a 99 and a 98 buyer. So I think that he could be ready to jump into that upper echelon of grade one sprinters. Also Mind Control and Cezanne, who was a former Todd Pletcher horse, or former Bob Afford horse, now with Todd Pletcher. So I think that that's an interesting betting race as well. And thankfully, we do not have a ton of short fields. There are a couple of 6-horse fields, but it's gonna be a great betting weekend. You know, the weather does not look like it's going to cooperate on Friday, unfortunately, but, you know, there's plenty of opportunities abound. And there's always those big maiden and allowance races too. There's not worth talking about necessarily specific races, but those races on the undercard are always great betting races as well. Plenty to choose from, a smorgasbord of racing and betting opportunities this weekend. And, you know, can't wait to come back next week and break it all down with you guys.
Where are you guys going to be watching the Derby?
At your house, John.
I'm not going to be here, but you're more than welcome to.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Monmouth Park. We're running a horse in the Long Branch, so I'm gonna watch Glider run and then stay around and watch you know, some of the other races from Churchill right from the box. So if you're a fan of the show and you want to come by and say hello, we'll be happy to sign some autographs as well if you want that.
Noah Lenz autograph.
He's going to be there also. We'll be in Monmouth Park
to get Lenz autograph. For sure.
I don't blame you. There's a longer line, and rightfully so. But yeah, we'll be in box 110 at Monmouth Park. Come on by and bring the kids. But yeah, where are you guys watching the show from? The race from?
I know there's a bunch of bars around here in Brooklyn that are doing Derby parties, like a surprising amount of bars that are doing derby parties. I remember back in the day, I had to watch it at the old OTB because there wasn't anybody else anywhere else I could really go. So, you know, might put on a bow tie or something and head down to one of the local watering holes. But those are my plans. Bill, what about you?
I'd just be watching at home.
Yep. Such a homebody. But yeah.
Very nice, Bill.
That's great, John. You'll be at Monmouth amongst the people.
I'm going to be a man amongst the people, which again flows right into the interview we have with Mr. Rapoli. He's a man of the people.
Great toss, because I wanted to mention that before we go to commercial. After this commercial break, we're going to have our interview with Mike Rapoli. It honestly maybe my favorite interview we've ever done on the show. We've talked to a lot of great people, had a lot of fun. But Mike from Queens, as he's known now to me forever, is just such a funny, down-to-earth guy. Despite all of his riches, he's easy to talk to. And, you know, the one thing I'll say about this episode, if you ever listen to the show with kids in the room, send them out of the room for this episode. This is not the one. Or put on your headphones or something. This is not the one to listen to with your kids around, because there were a lot of swear words. But, man, did we have a lot of fun. It was great to talk to him. And he's the kind of guy that now I'm rooting for this weekend. So after this break, we have a long, great, funny conversation with Mike Rapoli. You should definitely check out. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Pennsylvania bred just one time, who I mentioned in the last segment, was the winner of the Grade 1 Madison Stakes this spring. Keeneland is entered in this weekend's Grade 1 Derby City Distaff. The Brad Cox trainee is owned by Breeder Warriors Reward LLC and by Commonwealth New Era Racing. So best of luck to her and her connections this weekend. Also a reminder about those PA bred, PA sired 2-year-old Stallion Series stakes coming up, with two stakes on August 22nd and two on September 24th. You can visit pabred.com to learn more. We'll be right back after this message from the PHBA.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred 2-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit pabred.com.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled to bring on this week. I remember him when he was just racing cheap claimers at Aqueduct. Now he's on top of the world. Mike Rapoli, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Joe. Hey, John. How are you guys?
Great to talk to you. Great to have you on. Obviously a big week for you. You got a couple of contenders in the Derby and in the Oaks. Nest is a shorter price. You got Mo Donegal in the Derby. Going to ask you the standard question of how they're doing, how you're feeling about them. But also, I know you're a handicapper too. So what would be your handicapping opinion on that?
Well, handicapping gets swayed when you own horses in the race, Joe. Let's be clear. Whatever I don't want to see, I cross out. Right. And then I just go on to why I have the best chance of winning. So you're not going to get that. I mean, the way I view the race, I made Mo Donegal 1-5 and I made Nest 1-9. It's so clear for me. I mean, I basically scratched out everybody. So I'm good. I'm good. I feel really good. But listen, it combination, you know, Nest, obviously we bought her as a yearling. She wound up being a Grade 1 winner to a sister to Idol, who won a Grade 1. And we own her with Eclipse and Michael House. And, you know, she's just honestly, for Curlin, to be precocious, to win the Remsen, win the Demoiselle, come back and win the two stakes this year in, you know, incredible fashion, especially Ashlyn. I mean, we all know that Curlins want to be 4-year-olds. So when they're talented at 3, you got to feel really, really good. And every week that goes by, she gets older. And every week that she goes by, she looks better. So really, really excited by her. And I think you guys both know the distance is not going to be an issue. In fact, if they can move this race to 1.5 miles, we'll sign up for that too. Mo Donegal.
Does that mean you might run her in the Belmont?
If you're interviewing me at the end of the race and I have a smile on my face,
all right,
there's a chance. But
okay,
if you're not interviewing me at the end of the race and I'm walking to my car, then I might have a different answer. So let's just leave it at that.
Okay. Fair enough. How are you feeling?
you know, listen, you know, Jerry Crawford and Donegal Racing. I mean, obviously, I follow this horse so closely for a couple of reasons. One, he's with, you know, out of Uncle Mo. Two, he's with Todd Fletcher. And three, Irad's been on every single start. So I've been closely watching the horse, rooting for him behind the scenes or, you know, telling Todd, how's he doing? And congratulating Donegal Racing. And, you know, I saw an opportunity to, you know, I very rarely buy into a horse that's established. But when you got an Uncle Mo and you got Todd Pletcher and you got Irad and a syndicate like Donegal Racing, I think is awesome.
Meant to be.
Partners with Eclipse, partners with West Point, partners with Donegal. Some single owners don't like to be partners with syndicates because there's so many owners. But you know what? This will be the first race where my entourage of 70 is going to be outnumbered by Donegal Racing 140. So it just tells me I can have some more friends and family.
Absolutely. And let's stick with Mo Donegal still. You know, I remember when we were in the Derby last year and at the post position draft, you know, we were going, please don't be 1 or 20. Please don't be 1 or 20. But Mo Donegal has actually, you know, run really, really well from the inside. I think, you know, he won or placed in 4 races where he was in the inside post. So does the one hole bother you as a handicapper?
You know, I'm 0-7 in the Derby. I would never have won one with any other horse. Now that they've moved the rail outside, I mean, the starting gate outside, it really is a straight run to the turn versus where you have to go out 5 lengths, you know, before you come in. Second is if you watch Mo Donegal in the Remsen and you watch him in the wood, he sits on the rail behind horses anyway, you know. And, you know, I spoke to Todd right after the draw and I actually text Jerry Crawford. I said, I don't know how you feel, but I love the one. And I think, you know, for a horse like Mo Donegal to win, you're going to have to get, you got to save ground and you're going to have to get a great trip. So part of that means getting to the rail. If you told me he had the 20 post, I probably wouldn't be on this podcast today. Because where's he going to go from the 20 post? He's going to have to make 20 length turn to go to the rail. Now he's there. You know, you can get stopped on the rail, though. Let's just be honest. On that first turn, you can be stopped. But if he can get around that first turn and see himself at like 10 to 13th and then save some ground and get some speed out front, and you really have a great jockey who's fearless. You know, Irad's going to be right there. And he's going to maneuver like you've never seen anybody maneuver. I guess I just got to hope that when he crosses the line first, there's no inquiry with Irad, but he's gonna get us there. He's gonna get us there. He'll figure out a trip. He'll give us a great ride.
You mentioned Uncle Mo before. I was actually at Ashford last week and got to meet him for the first time, and he was just so impressive. And one of those horses that you can really tell he knows he's the shit. You know what I mean? He's got that attitude that just knows he's the king. You know, obviously he's a very, very important horse to you. Do you have like an anecdote or memories of him that stick out in particular?
You know, it's everything. I mean, obviously I'm playing the game at a very, very high level now. And with Uncle Mo, I just went, you know, Joe, from claimers where you used to lose money on them, now to grade ones that you lose money on, but that's okay. So the consistent thing is that you're losing money. But when he won, he gave me a taste of this is why I'm in this game. And, you know, I made a lot of speeches and interviews and I said, listen, I'm probably never going to own a horse more talented or more brilliant than Uncle Mo. And I've had grade ones. I've won a classic. I've won Travers. But as far as pure brilliance, I mean, Uncle Mo is Uncle Mo. And he had that personality the whole time. I mean, when I guess the biggest memory I have was, you know, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, you go into the paddock and you see all these horses and you pan over to Uncle Mo. And you say, who brought the 3-year-old in to play with the 2-year-olds? Yeah. It was almost like a high school kid playing against third graders. Yeah. And I was so nervous for like 3 weeks. Honestly, once I went to the paddock, I started to get nervous for the other horses. He was just like, please don't hurt anyone, Uncle Mo. Please just be careful with these guys. Like, it was just amazing. He's just ahead of his time. And, you know, I've said this before. People wonder, oh, would he get a mile and a quarter? He would have got a mile and a half. I mean, he would have been American Pharoah before American Pharoah. And you know what? He proved it in the Stallion Bowl. I mean, Nyquist And hopefully Mo Donegal is his second Derby winner.
Yep. And Mike, you know, you mentioned Todd Pletcher before and the importance of having a top trainer like that. He actually gave you the honor of having you introduce him in his Hall of Fame induction speech. What was that like?
Well, I don't know if I would call Todd a top trainer, but if you want to, I don't want you to put words in my mouth. That's it. You know, I think I was about to fire Todd. And right before I did, he said, "Hey, Mike, I just need one more thing. Can you do my Hall of Fame speech?" And, you know, I kind of wish I was getting into it. That's what I thought it was, but obviously not. But my speech was so long, I felt like it was my speech anyway. So if I ever get in, all we got to do is play that speech over again. But, you know, when you talk about introducing or anybody to the Hall of Fame, I mean, what a huge honor that someone's thinking about you that. But when you talk about Todd, where he's in the Hall of Fame of Hall of Fame of Famers, I mean, he's in the top 1%.
Yeah.
You know, to me, he's the greatest trainer of all time. Hopefully he doesn't watch this. Usually when I speak, he just shuts it off. So he probably won't watch this. But listen, when you talk about a trainer, and you talk about Colts and Phillies, and you talk about two-year-olds and four-year-olds, and you talk about sprints and distance, and you talk about dirt and turf, who does it better than Todd? He's got a horse for every division and every age and everything. You know, there might be someone who wins more turf races and someone that maybe wins more three-year-old Colt races. But when you talk about winning at everything, and then when you look at the Stallions, I mean, go look at every farm. You saw Uncle Mo, you know, I mean, what else is there? And what else is on other farms? It's, you know, I mean, he's changing the breed by himself. So he's a great person. I like Tracy and his kids more than him. I like his mom and his dad more than him. So he's okay.
Don't worry. He doesn't watch the show. He's been on the show three times, but he doesn't watch the show.
He didn't watch himself. That's for sure. He must have been bored. He must have been real bored when he was on. I'm surprised you guys stayed up. Wow. So
I got to ask about this because this is one of my hobby horses on this show is to talk about how much I love Aqueduct. And I might feel like sometimes I'm the only person in the world who loves Aqueduct because I grew up going there. You grew up taking the A train there. I know you have similar memories growing up at Aqueduct. Will you be sad to see it go?
Sad? I'm not so sure. Reminisce and feel good about it. Yeah, I mean, it was part of a special childhood where I would cut out of school. I would take the train down to Rockaway Boulevard, and Woodhaven Boulevard, and then walk past the White Castles. I probably would see you there, Joe, and just keep going in and, you know, walk around a flea market that was every Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm not sure. But, you know, for me, winning at Aqueduct is just reminds me of being a kid with $20 in your pocket, you know, that, you know, listen, that the chairs are the same ones that I sat on 40 years ago, kind of embarrassing, that the TV is still black and white, like I had in the 80s, pretty embarrassing. Yep. Whatever you wear, make sure you're going to throw those clothes out that day. I think that's pretty embarrassing, but as far as always being Mike from Queens, you know, Joe, I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from Queens, which, you know, is a much better borough.
Definitely.
To me, it's just reminds me of my youth and a simpler time and a time where, you know, I always say think big, dream bigger. And to be able to win the Wood Memorial twice and, you know, win the Cigar Mile. And, you know, I've had horses in the Carter, haven't won that yet. But just, you know, winning those races are real, real special.
You're definitely trying to start this Brooklyn-Queens beef, but I'm not taking the bait. Because
you'd lose. That's so you're smart. That's pretty good, Joe.
Do you remember when there used to be Brooklyn Day and then we would get off from school and then Queens glommed onto it and became Brooklyn Queens Day? I'm still mad at you guys about that.
Well, we had you call the day and we took off. So we were pretty smart, weren't we? You guys needed a day to take off. I just took off anyway. So
go ahead, John.
All right. I'm going to see if I can steer this back onto the racing rails. So, Mike, one of the things that we study, that Len studies, my dad and that I study, are trends in the industry. And a couple of years ago, you and partner Vinny Viola started going to the yearling sales, and you would purchase together, stallion pedigreed yearlings, mainly, you know, primarily colts. And it seemed like that was a great strategy. And now you've expanded it to where I think you bought 40 or 50 yearlings, colts primarily that have stallion pedigrees. Is that a plan? Is that a 1 year plan, 3 year plan, 5 year plan with Vinny, or just kind of take it as it comes?
Well, first I want to talk about your dad. Your dad is a legend, John. You're lucky to have him as a dad, as you know. I do his class at Babson every year. He invites me on, which is a huge honor. Ed Rosen and Barbara Rosen introduced me to him, and he's just an amazing guy. And I'm not going to give his age away on this, because when you just told me his age, actually, I'm going to give it away.
No, so, no, you're going to be disowned. I'm going to be disowned if you tell me.
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it.
In confidence.
But I'm going to tell you that knowing his age makes him a bigger legend than I even thought he was. So I've never seen a guy so passionate about horses. He always says, Mike, I root for you, but if I'm in the race, I'm rooting for you for second. I love that. what he does for kids, what he does for college kids, what he does for this game. I hope he's not, you know, that ad that you opened up with at the beginning, Green Group. I'm hoping he gets a discount. He deserves it. But he's a great guy, and a lot more than a great horseman. So that's that. So, with Vinny, you know what? I mean, listen, we've been friends for 12 years. You know, I've had, Uncle Mo, and he had Liam's Map and Always Dreaming, and I had stopped charging Maria, and, you know, we find each other rooting for each other. There was a lot of partnerships. You know, I love Vinny, Teresa. I love the kids. You know, they love Maria and Joya. We're like one big, you know, happy Italian family together. So it was fun. And I think it gave us the opportunity to double our chances. Instead of me buying 25 and him buying 25, we're buying 50. I think we're going to spend money every September and October and August in Saratoga and buy yearlings. I bought a bunch of two-year-olds. Vinny doesn't really buy two-year-olds. I have 30 broodmares. I think he has 50 broodmares. I think we're going to do it. I mean, I love Vinny. I love Teresa. And, you know, winning a race with them, whether it's the green silks or the blue and orange, are great. If you guys want to check, though, I tell Vinny and Teresa all the time, the blue and orange silks seem to win more than when the green silks are. I just need to be very, very clear about that.
We'll get our researches on that right away to figure out who the winner is. But definitely want to ask you about this before we let you go. It was actually reported earlier today. It's a big day for you. You and your company, Body Armor, are donating $24 million to the Mamba and Mamacita Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization for youth sports. It's founded in honor of the late, great Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna. Can you just talk about why that was important to you and what kind of impact you hope that money will make?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bittersweet, tough 2 days. Joe and John, you know, I met Kobe at the end of when I had Vitamin Water 2007 and 8, and he was still focused on winning championships. And I got reintroduced to him in 2011. And we just started talking. He saw the end of his career as a basketball player happening and wanted to talk to entrepreneurs. And, you know, when he hurt his Achilles, you know, it was the first time he couldn't practice like 18 hour days. So, he called, and I'm up 24 hours a day. He's up 24 hours a day. So we had that in common. I'm pretty intense. I'm pretty passionate. He's pretty intense and passionate. There's a reason why he had four girls and I have one girl. God was smart enough not to give either one of us a boy. You wouldn't want to be Kobe Bryant's son. I started Body Armor, you know, in 2011, Kobe wanted to invest, and, you know, it wasn't making money, you know, and I'll share this quick story with you. It was losing money. I mean, he saw we were going 1, 4, 6 million, but we were losing 10, 12 and 16 million. So he kept bugging me about investing. And one day he just, he had me at dinner and he just said, hey, you know, I keep asking you, I'm giving this to everybody. I'm helping you out. I'm helping giving you these great ideas. And I'm like, if I didn't like you, I'd give you as much as you want. I like you. All right. I apologize. And I said, Kobe, we got a 1% chance. And just repeated 1%, 1%, 1%. And I didn't really know what he was going to say. And he said, just sat there and thought. He says, grew up in Italy, went to high school, Philadelphia, was drafted at 17. My dad had to sign my contract, won 5 NBA titles, MVPs, gold medals, and championships. And he said, 1%? Those are the best fucking odds I've ever had in my life. And I was like, this guy's more intense and competitive and psycho than me. The truth of the matter was 1/10%. And honestly, it, you know, to have a friendship that you don't talk about like that and you just know you have, and, you know, it was just devastating. And a company went to focus on, you know, doing it with Kobe versus for Kobe. He was so involved. And I had Vanessa, Natalia, Bianca and Coco at the Breeders' Cup after the sale. They were at Del Mar. We were together as a family, and it was an unbelievable 12 hours with them. And, but a very sad 2 months after, because the realization. So this is about Kobe's legacy and just keeping him and Gianna's legacy around. There's so much he can still teach us. There's so much he can still teach people who have never seen him play. His mentality, the way he looked at life, his intensity, the way he fought adversity. And you could see it with Vanessa, Natalia, and the kids, you know, how tough they are. And I respect Vanessa so much. And anybody who thinks they're having a tough day or things are really rough, think about what Vanessa and Natalia and Bianca and Coco go through almost every single day. So to me, this $24 million donation was the least I can do. But, you know, I want that $24 million to be $1 billion a foundation. You know, I want to be bigger than St. Jude. I want to be bigger than Ronald McDonald House. So this was really about, you know, keeping this going, keeping the momentum going 2.5 years later. And, you know, 25 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when we're not here, I want the Mamba and Mambacita Foundation to still be here. And that really be the legacy that Kobe leaves behind.
Well, I think that's a great place to end it. And we appreciate what you're doing. And yeah, you're definitely carrying on the legacy and trying to make an impact. And we love talking to you, Mike. We would love to have you back on the show anytime. Mike from Queens, you can come talk more shit about Brooklyn even. We'll allow that. But Mike, it's great to talk to you, man.
We appreciate it, Joe. Thank you, John. Really appreciate it. Say hello to your dad, okay?
I will. And thanks, Mike. And just with this interview, you can see why you're one of the guys that everyone roots for. I mean, we just and we really appreciate it. Thank you. And the best of luck this weekend.
Yes,
except in the American turf, because we're running against you in the American turf. But otherwise, you can win any race.
Was it your horse that won? You guys, lately, honestly, when I see you beat me, Ed's just said, Lance horse just beat us. I'm like, that's okay. It's okay. I'm not kidding you. I swear to God, when I see that your dad beats me, honestly, if it's in a graded stake, I might feel differently.
It's a little different.
It's a special weight, like it was recently, right. I'm fine. If it's an allowed, I'm fine.
One of the reasons I like Mike is I remember being in the paddock at Saratoga, and it was like a 32,000 claimer. And you were talking to the trainer and getting so hyped up, like it was the biggest grade one race in the world. I was like, that's a real racing guy.
You know, Joe, when you handicap and you win a pick three or a super, you hit a pick three or super factor, does it matter if it's a claiming race or a grade one? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So winning a race is winning a race. Taking a picture is taking a picture. Getting into the winner's circle, like, you know, one of the days I'll always remember is we had when Uncle Mo won the Champagne, I had a horse called Run from Grand Avenue, which was named after in Queens. Nice area, Joe. You should look into it.
The OTB.
In Queens, it was an OTB. And we used to run to Grand Avenue, get off the bus to go bet the races. And three races later, my brother, who's a New York City cop, I named the horse Gerard Loves Beer. That horse wins. Both claiming horses. Like, holy shit. Now I got Uncle Mo in a grade one. I said, I'm going to fucking win 2 out of 3. And I'm going to lose the fucking Champagne. And I'm going to lose my shit. So then Uncle Mo wins, and then we just go 3 for 3, and that was it. But I remember the run to Grand Avenue, Gerard Loves Beer, and Uncle Mo.
Yeah.
That was the triple. So that was fun. And then awesome. There was another day at Aqueduct. You want to talk about a special day at Aqueduct? You know, a kid from Queens. I win 3 races in a row, and they're all graded stakes. And they were on the card as the 7th, 8th, and 9th. Unlimited Budget wins the Damozel. Overanalyze wins the Remsen.
And Stay Thirsty, and, right?
Stay Thirsty wins the Cigar Mile. Yep. I just hit the pick three. I didn't leave. I took 3 fucking pitches in the winner's circle. I guarantee there hasn't been an owner I don't even, can you win three graded stakes in one day? It's probably never been done.
Yeah. Right.
And that they were won within an hour, I won three graded stakes. People don't win graded stakes in their whole life. I'm sitting here in a track that I went to when I was 13 and a half years old, and I'm winning three graded stakes back to back to back. And if you guys saw that Stay Thirsty fucking Cigar Mile, I've watched it 200 times. It is the best nose fucking win of my life.
It was tight.
I've watched it 100 times. We lose every time. If there's an investigation and there's a different angle that comes out, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah.
Still, I'm not convinced that we won that.
Yep.
You know? So it's so much fun. You know,
it really is. Oh man, this was a lot of fun. Yeah, we definitely got to have you back on.
We appreciate it, Joe. Thank you, John.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Mike Rapoli will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. The XBTV workout of the week this week, and there was a lot to choose from, features Whyta Barrio, who worked 4 furlongs and 48.28 on Saturday at Gulfstream, which you can see right now. If you're watching the video version of this show, he has since arrived at Churchill Downs. He drew post 15 with morning line odds of 10-1 in the Kentucky Derby. Definitely an interesting horse, so I think might get a little bit lost on the board if people agree with Bill and just toss out the Florida horses. And as always, if you want to check out those Derby contender works, go to xbtv.com. They are all over every single horse, basically, who's going to run the Derby and the Oaks. Just search in the search bar whatever horse you want to check out. And you don't have to rely on the clockers this year for this Derby and this Oaks. You can just formulate your own opinions. Just go to xbtv.com. Check out all the works for all the horses you're interested in. It's an invaluable resource, especially this time of the year. So we had some news on the Heise front yesterday. Obviously, we all remember when the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency backed out of becoming the medication policy enforcer in the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. But so then the Heise Board of Directors has selected a different organization to run all of the drug programs in Heise. It's Drug Free Sport International, also known as DFS, to build Heise's independent anti-doping and medication control enforcement agency. I haven't really heard of them, just to be honest. It doesn't mean that they're not competent and that they won't do a good job. But it's just they don't necessarily have the same credibility that USADA automatically brought. But Bill probably knows more about this than me. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I never heard of them either. So let's get all three. John, have you ever heard of these guys?
Not before this article. No, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, I could be totally wrong about this. And here's my concern. Now, you know, they do drug testing for everybody under the sun, which is odd that we've never heard of them. NFL, MLB, NASCAR, NCAA. But do they, so if they're testing for steroids in baseball, they're clearly the organization that Major League Baseball uses to see if player X was on steroids or not, or whatever other drugs may not be allowed. My worry is, and I don't know this, but one reason we don't know is because this organization, nobody knows anything about them. Do they do anything other than drug tests? Are they showing up at Mike Trout's house in the middle of December to do out of competition testing? I doubt it very much. Are they doing anything along the lines of, boots on the ground, investigations? Maybe, but I doubt it very much. My fear here is that what they've done is they've taken the process of the drug testing and transferred it from the states to Drug Free Sports International. Again, I preface this, I could be totally wrong about this, but I don't think that I am. If all this outfit does is do drug testing, this is not any sort of improvement over the system we have now. Everybody wanted USADA because we know that they were going to go out and do the type of things that were included in the FBI raid that got all these trainers in trouble in the first place. And they have this track record. So, you know, they are the gold standard when it. So we went from the gold standard in drug testing in sports to an outfit that were all sort of who? What do they do? Hey, they can prove me wrong. And I hope they do. I hope these guys are great. Absolutely great. But it just, from the minute it was announced that USADA was out of this, I've just been completely down and discouraged about the Horse Racing Integrity Safety Act. And frankly, this announcement that came out yesterday kind of just lends to that feeling of, this thing was so promising, but it's not going to be what we hoped it would be.
Yeah. And I think when HISA, the rules and the and we thought the pie in the sky, situation was going to be where we'd have a new set of uniform rules, which would be great for racing and everyone involved, and that USADA would be the bulldog that would have the teeth to be able to not only do the drug testing, but also do the investigative, work as well, which is really the more important part of this deal, because we've done testing for a long time. And obviously testing isn't the important part. It's not what works. It's not what catches cheaters necessarily. It's the investigative part of it. And I think, unfortunately, from a negotiation standpoint, we kind of, as an industry, got over our skis a little bit, assuming that HISA and USADA were going to be, kind of a coupled entry, one and the same. And then when the price tag allegedly came out that it was going to be way too much money to employ USADA for HISA rules, we were kind of screwed as an industry, because we've been going along with, expecting to have this partnership, and then we didn't. Now, maybe, Bill, I agree with everything you're saying. Maybe it's a situation where, we don't really know the names and criteria and bios of the umpires and the referees that are involved in NFL and Major League Baseball, and we don't know them because, they don't do anything wrong. So therefore, you kind of don't really know anything about them. Maybe that's why none of us have heard of the Drug Free Sport International group. I don't know if that's really a real argument, but I'm hoping that because these guys have been employed by all the other major sports, that they know what they're doing with regard to the testing part. But yeah, man, the investigative part was really the important, in my estimation, was the important, portion of the HISA rule with the coupling with USADA.
Well, I will say this, and this is from the article in today's TDN. On the investigative front, it says it is expected that the investigative function will be supported by Five Stones Intelligence, which is a leading professional services company comprised of former DEA, FBI, IRS, ATF, and NYPD special agents and detective. They have led some of the largest sports investigations in history. And if you remember, the Five Stones investigation led in a lot of ways to the FBI indictments that happened in March of 2020. So I think if that's true, just as it is expected, it doesn't say they're definitely gonna serve that function. But in that way, if you have that as kind of a supporting thing to the drug testing, then you're talking about something a little bit different. And I think the one other positive thing was that before USADA backed out, they did release those draft rules, those draft medication rules. So at least the new organization has something to piggyback off of and to go off of going forward when it comes to making medication policy. Now, the goal is to, I'm quoting again from the story, it says the draft rules will be presented to the HISA board of directors for approval and then submitted to the FTC by July 1st to initiate its rulemaking process with the goal of implementing the FTC approved program on January 1st. 2023. So the goal is still to have the new medication rules in place by the first of next year. We'll see. There's a lot of stuff that, we thought was going to happen by now that hasn't necessarily happened. States are still deciding whether or not to opt into HISA or not. California was the first state to do so a week or two ago. New Jersey did not opt in. And that's a whole nother mess in terms of how we get all of these states on board. Still a lot of cost structure issues to figure out. But yeah, I think that what happened when USADA backed out is now we're in a little bit of a scramble mode to try to get someone to fill their role. And I just don't think, no matter who it is, you can find any other organization in America or in the world who has their kind of credibility to do this sort of thing. So, I hope that you know, the draft rules that, that USADA put out are a good template, a good enough template. Hope that Five Stones will still stay in and do that investigative work, because we need it. It takes a village. It's going to take a village to clean up this sport. And I think that there are some good things happening and there is some positive momentum. But we're like, we were right on the cusp of finally having a uniform program and enforcement. And it's just, now it's like, I'll believe it when I see it. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, Joe, and again, I hope we can go back someday and I'll have egg all over my face. But this feels like we were shopping for a Mercedes-Benz. And then we realized, we can't afford it. That's too much money. So we bought a Toyota. That's my take on it.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. West Point was represented by a winner at Golden Gate on Thursday with Crossword, who's trained by Andy Mathis, and they have three horses lined up for Kentucky Oaks Day and four more for the Derby undercard, including Obesos in the new Knicks Go Overnight Stakes and Cavalry Charge in the Old Forester Turf Classic Stakes. So best of luck to West Point and all the partners. It's going to be great to see y'all out there and see those golden black silks this weekend. They're always present on these big days, and this weekend is no exception. So we'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse. Every step of the way, when it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. The deadline for entry for the Facing Tipton July in Saratoga sale is May 6th. That's coming right up. That's this Friday. At the Facing Tipton July sale, Legacy has exceeded the sales average for the past 6 years, and at the Facing Saratoga sale, they've sold 87% of offerings since 2007. Tommy and Wendy have a great clearance rate at all these sales. And like I said, the yearling sale season right around the corner, so definitely go check them out. So there's some very sad news to report before we wrap up the show. Callie Witt, who was an exercise rider for Joe Sharp, unfortunately, tragically died last Friday morning in an accident on the Keeneland training track. And it's obviously a tragedy anytime anybody dies on the racetrack, but she was only 20 years old, so that makes it extra sad and hard for her family and her friends. So we send out all our condolences to her family and friends. And there were a lot of nice tributes to Callie over the weekend at Keeneland, particularly her pony Miles was in the winner's circle when Joe Sharp won a race on Saturday. So it's obviously devastating news for the racing community. And I also wanted to extend my particular condolences to Remy Bullock, who was a teacher of hers. And this weekend's cartoon, we'll throw it up at the end of this, was a dedication to her from Remy. So we're very sorry to Remy. Again, all of Callie's friends and family. And the Witt family asked that in lieu of flowers, donations can be made in Callie Witt's name to the Callie Witt Memorial Fund at BCTC Equine, home of the North American Racing Academy, the Jockey Club Safety Net Foundation, and or the Bluegrass Farms Charities. So definitely you can do some good work to remember and memorialize Callie's name. So once again, just so sorry to all of her family and friends. It was a horrible tragedy. But yeah, send those donations in her name for sure. Okay, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September yearling sale starting Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at the world's yearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Mike Rapoli, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. Enjoy the heck out of Oaks and Derby weekend. We'll see you next week.